Blog Talk Radio.
On today's show, we're going to talk to Martha Grover, who makes the Somnambulist blog and wrote the book One More for the People. We'll have on writer Joe Soldabar, who will read a superhero story, and we'll be taking some callers. Sorry about that. It looks like there was a there's some technical difficulties here with the show. I guess hopefully I haven't had a... I'm going to start this back from the top. I want to read a poem here by Alex Shigale. This is called Some Unsound Devices Highly Specified. If I could have anything I wanted, an ass kisser, skirt chaser, bootlicker, a donkey shiner for the rubbing of stones, a grave freshener in the shape of a cross, a holy roller, rebel rouser, doom flattener, a bizarro magnet for the attraction of flies, a sewage sucker upper. There's a fortune to be made inventing effective sidewalk gun removers, but I interrupt myself. Transparent, all-purpose putty for fixing plastic objects by filling in cracks and chips, a bleeping hack glove umbrella locator, a babe magnet, a furniture furnace for turning mice, roaches, rats, mosquitoes, and other pets in a fuel-efficient biomass. A lid for cover for keeping sea level safe. Life like rubber extensions for fingers, noses, and ears. Every possible variant, combinations of containers with minimal edges that can still be stacked for easy transport in larger rectangular volumes. A well-extruded clasper for shipping, picture-perfect unblemished fruit and pigs. Shades, pillowcases, and blankets that can be draped and worn over the human form. An infinite progression of small objects that can be used to stimulate child's play. A nail clipper that doubles as a scraper for nose hair. A mechanical means for real-time interpolation of personhood. Shovels for extricating unpopular propositions. A bagel that slices and butters itself, sluice screens for collecting size-specific specimens of material doo-doo culture, several options for the trimming of glare, a smile inducer for public conveyances, a variable expanding screw, scratch-and-sniff literature for pampered housebound dogs, a nice Bengali multicultural psychoanalyst. We could only design a human being for every one of our needs. A soup slurping, filth popping, scandal tainted tear jerker. A greeter for distant relatives and friends. A cross pollinator for grafting of family trees. a sitting chair containing exactly two atoms from Albert Einstein's wedding day bed. A solemn friendship transducer for the inspection of dreams. A wish recorder slash transmitter. A chewer and spitter for the utilization of sick days. I need to go on a while. I need to go on a while longer. A clean bill of health. Star charts for determining all auspicious days to dawdle. I demand a thank you note. An exclamation from your personal psychic. The privilege of walking the Dalmatians alone. A chronic esplanade for detouring around wrecks. Warbling made audible by doctoring warped LPs. Reconstruction of the nasal cavity for the propping of varicose facial veins. Gelated cough drops that make you feel green. Promulgation of clues for the latest crime spree. Culinary escapades. A means to remain relevant. Premonitions for the revivals of strum and drang. That's a poem by Alex Chigale. I was lucky enough to see him read that at an event this weekend. Jonathan Penn of Unlikely Stories and Susan Lewis of Mad Hat Press had a reading at Sidewalk NYC, and Alex was one of the readers, and he was nice enough to give me a copy of that poem when he was done reading, and I want to thank him for that. I enjoy that one a lot. Once again, that was called Some Unsound Devices Highly Specified, and the poet is Alex Chigale. So on today's show, we're going to have Martha Grover come on first. I'm a big fan of her work. She curates this Somnambulist zine and blog, and she wrote the excellent book One More for the People, which is a memoir about growing up in Portland, Oregon, with lots of different brothers and sisters. Humor ensues. There's a lot of heart in that book. I recommend you go out and you check that book out, One More for the People by Martha Grover. So let me see if I can pull Martha on the show now. Hey, Martha, you there?
Hi, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. There was a little bit of technical difficulties there in the beginning. I think we had like a minute of dead air.
Yeah, I heard that, but I'm on now, so.
Yeah. How you doing over there? Everything going good?
It's going good. It's just another gloomy, rainy day in Portland. I'm looking out the window now. It's been twilight, you know, all day, so.
Uh-huh. Does it rain in Portland? I mean, it rains in Portland a lot. Does it snow? Ever?
It does snow. Usually it melts within a couple of days. You know, we have Mount Hood. It's always snowy, but, it doesn't really get that cold here. It rarely goes below freezing. So.
Yeah. That's like in Seattle. It never snows in Seattle, right?
I think it does more than here, actually. But, same thing. It'll snow, and then it'll just melt. You rarely see dirty snow, you know? So it's always pretty snow, and then it melts. So
I've been telling people for 30 years that it doesn't snow in Seattle. Where the fuck do I get my facts about Seattle weather? I've never been there.
I don't know. But
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about with Seattle.
They had a huge snowstorm a couple years ago, and there was like this footage. It was all over in the national news of like this huge Greyhound bus type bus careening down the street and almost going into the freeway because it's like this wall with like a guardrail, and it was dangling half over the freeway.
Okay.
So it definitely snows and ices.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
So you're dead wrong.
I'm fucking totally wrong again. I have a big I got a big board above my desk. Every time I'm wrong, I put a sticker. I have like 1,000 stickers on the wrong line. I got two gold stars next to the right column. So I wanted to ask you some questions about your book, One More for the People. I read it recently, and I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to ask you some questions about writing it and what's involved, where it came from. Well, how did the writing process for One More for the People start for people who have no inkling as to your work?
Well, you know, it's been interesting having a book out because this is my first book, because people will ask me, you know, what's your next book about? And I actually wrote one more for the people not knowing that it was going to become a book. I've been doing my zine Somnambulist. It's a paper zine that I have subscribers for, and it's in a bunch of different stores all around. But I've been doing that for like almost 10 years. And I went to I moved to San Francisco a couple years ago to get my MFA at the California College of the Arts. And I got an email. I can't remember if it was email or call, but from my publisher, Michael Heald. And he had checked out one of my zines at the library, at Multnomah County Library. They actually carry a lot of zines, which is amazing and awesome. And he really liked it, and he wanted to know if I was interested in doing a book. And so over the course, and yeah, I said yes. And then I moved back to Portland after I graduated, and over the course of like the next 5 months, I basically like gave him every zine I ever wrote, and he looked at my blog, which had a lot of material on it, and then, you know, we compiled a book. And so 80% of the book is Somnambulist or blog stuff, and then about 20% is stuff that was never published anywhere. And so Michael was really smart in, like, looking at all the material and figuring out how to organize it. And so it's roughly chronological, but it's not one long story. It's a bunch of interviews and essays about my life and my family's life over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I would say you have a pretty – first of all, your writing is fantastic. You have a very clear, great way of writing. There's zero bullshit in your writing style, which is like awesome. You know, I really dig that. Aside from that, I think you have a really cool story. You're like, everybody wants to fucking write a memoir about their life because everybody thinks they have an interesting life, and I think you actually do. So you know. Good idea, writing a memoir, or maybe you didn't mean to. Like you say, it started out as a zine.
Yeah, I didn't mean to write a book. I mean, when I was in grad school, I was writing a more traditional memoir, which was one story of I was diagnosed with Cushing's disease, which is this really weird, rare disease. I was diagnosed with that in 2008, and so when I was in grad school, I was working on a more traditional book that would have been my first book, and then, you know, this budget came along, which is, it's really cool, actually, because a lot of those pieces that are in there, it's like I feel like they have a home now, and they were kind of just, like, in my writing, and they were, you know, I didn't have a vision for how those were going to be a book, and so that was really cool to have Michael come in from the outside and, like, have this vision of how they were all going to fit together. And, you know, I think at some point I am going to do the traditional memoir about my Cushing's disease. But the thing is, I also wanted to comment on something else you said, which is, like, everyone thinks they have an interesting life. I feel like everyone does have an interesting life. And I think probably has one memoir in them. But I can't remember who said it, but I love the quote, interesting stories happen to those who can tell them. And
that's true.
I think that's so true. You know, if you know how to craft a story, you can make something, you know, anything interesting. But I think I will eventually write the memoir about my Cushing's disease experience. And a lot of that is in the book as well. But I think the hard part with memoir is, like, you don't know where to end it, you know, and I'm still dealing with a lot of that stuff. And I feel like, you know, when I was writing it was going to be like present tense. It was all, everything I wrote was in present tense. And now I'm feeling like, now that I'm a little bit older and have more perspective, I think I'll probably just rewrite the whole thing in past tense. And maybe this is getting too into the weeds of like writerly stuff, but
you mean
anyway,
like,
so that's
like
my plan.
In the past tense first person? You guys, that's cool,
The memoir originally started as a first person present tense. And it really heightened the sense of, like, emergency and everything was happening to me, and I had no perspective on it. But now that I'm a little bit out of the emergency state of getting diagnosed with this really awful disease, like, I have more perspective on it. I have more, like, you know, not like I want to write some cheesy, like, life lessons book, but I do have things that I've gleaned from that experience. So it's a different book now. And so, you know, I'm kind of a perfectionist, and I think maybe I should just do it, you know? It's like you always are waiting for, like, the perfect moment, but...
and it doesn't happen.
You know, the longer you wait, the more it changes, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's like, I was just talking to my friend Aaron Dietz. He's a mutual friend of ours, and he's doing 12 books this year. He's putting out 12 books. And
12?
Yeah. He's got 12 books. He's He's got 12 projects he's going on, and his advice is just like, you know, put it, you know, do it. You're never gonna, it's never gonna be perfect. If you try to make it perfect, you'll never put it out. Now maybe don't attain to try to break Aaron's record and put out 13 books next year. But
are these e-books? Or are they like physical books?
He's I believe it's all like e-book and physical, and anthology. Actually, there's a guy coming on in a few minutes who's going to read a superhero story, which is a submission for one of Aaron's projects this year. It's an anthology about superheroes.
Right.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about your childhood, though, because, like, your story is so interesting because, you know, you grew up with a lot of brothers and sisters. How many brothers and sisters do you have, or siblings?
Well, one brother and five natural sisters. And then when I was 18, we kind of adopted my friend Rebecca, and so I count her as one of my sisters. So there's seven natural, you know, biological kids, and then one adopted sister. So, yeah, six girls, one boy, or seven girls, one boy, depending on how you count it.
And where did you grow up? Where did you all live together?
I was born in Portland, and then when I was six, we moved to Corbett, which is a little town east of Portland in the Columbia River Gorge, and we were all of us were homeschooled on and off, you know, through the course of my schooling. I think I was the homeschooled the longest. I was homeschooled till the sixth grade. You know, my siblings always like to point that out to me because they think it somehow fundamentally, I don't know, well, I don't want to say scarred me, but shaped who I am. Being the one that was homeschooled the longest. Homeschooled is also like kind of a rough term. You know, I basically read all day. That's basically all I did. My math skills are pretty negligible. But I think my mom did okay. I mean, basically, kids are like sponges. All you have to do is teach them how to read, and then, you know, it's like learning to read and then reading to learn, you know, whatever the saying is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And running around in the woods. We lived on 5 acres, and it was pretty amazing. I had a pretty amazing childhood. So,
yeah,
it was fun. It was chaotic.
You guys were just loose in 5 acres of pine trees, huh?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty
That's
much.
Awesome.
And all crammed into I grew up in a double-wide trailer with seven kids, and, you know, it was pretty chaotic. Never had my own room. I think, you know, until I was, like, in the sixth grade, I showered with my sister Zoe to, like, save water. I don't know how efficient that really was in the end, but, you know, no privacy, a lot of collaborative play, which I think was really good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up, I just have one brother, but, I mean, we shared a lot of stuff. You would have thought there was seven of us, all the shit we shared. You know, like bathwater, like how,
right.
You know, we're not poor, but, you know, lower middle class, but you got to share that bathwater, right? I mean, come on.
Right. Can't waste it.
Yeah, can't waste that bathwater.
Well, I feel a little bad for my brother just because he had so many sisters, but there were a lot of, just coincidentally, there were a lot of families we lived on a dead-end road, and there were a lot of families that had kids the same age, and so we kind of grew up, and it was like a pack of kids, and, you know, it was pretty fun, just running around in the woods, you know, boys against girls, fighting each other, you know, that kind of thing. It was pretty awesome.
It sounds really good. I grew up in a campground. I grew up in, so in the wintertime, it was just me. It was no other kids. My little brother was there too, but it was just us in a whole empty campground. So I can kind of relate a little bit to growing up in the wilderness, you know, in that extent. But I grew up in Jersey.
Why did you grow up in a campground? I mean, were your parents like homeless or?
No, actually, we rented a house. We rented a house in a campground. And it was like, so in the summertime, it was like one of six houses in the campground. I think while we lived there, only like maybe like one of them had another family that rented. But it was just like some old dude who would like kind of not really come out of his house. He, you know, he would just – he had a – we all had cars and shit, so he would – you would see him every once in a while. But in the campground, it was just like summertime, all kids, you know, you play, you know, all these different kids there. There was a general store, an arcade, a swimming pool, and and you just go and hunt for the New Jersey Devil in the pitch. It was cool. It was really cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a couple more questions about your projects that you have going on, your different things. So, yeah, you do, like, a storytelling night at Tad's Dumpling House. Tell me about that.
Well, the place is called Tad's Chicken and Dumplings. And for people that aren't familiar with the area, the Sandy River flows into the Columbia River. And at one point, the Columbia River Scenic Highway was the only east-west thoroughfare through the area. Now there's I-84, but there was no freeway at the time. Like, my great-grandmother actually came to Oregon with her husband and my grandmother and, you know, my great aunts and uncles on this highway during World War II to work in the shipyards. And, you know, they were Okies, you know, they were from Kansas, but they were basically Dust Bowl refugees, and they were trying to get work in Oregon, and that's how my family is in Oregon at this point. But they came through on this highway, and it's, you know, like a national monument or what, it's like a historic thing. Well, when they built the freeway, it was so much more convenient to go on the freeway. And so there used to be all these old roadhouses on the Scenic Highway where people would stop and eat. And Tad's Chicken and Dumplings is one of those old diners, and it's managed to stay afloat, whereas most of the other ones are defunct now and out of business. But it's a really great setting. It's all original from like the 40s and 50s, and it's beautiful. It's like knotty pine on the inside, and the menu is exactly the same. And my sister is the bookkeeper there, and she wanted to do an event with me reading. And, you know, my book came out, now it's been a little bit over a year, but I do so many readings anyway that I didn't think I'd be able to get people to come out there just for me, like reading every month. So I said, why don't we do a storytelling thing? Because, you know, I love The Moth, and there's another storytelling event in Portland called Backman's PDX. And this is a little different because it's just more casual, and it's really, really fun. And we've had, I mean, each time just gets better and better. So
yeah. Do you find there's like a scene of people who like, do you have like you're getting like more and more people who want to get involved, or is it like that? Like, it picks up steam? Is there a community of people who like to do these things?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I have to turn people down every month to be storytellers. You know, so I'm usually booked out like two or three months in advance of who wants to, you know, tell people want to tell stories. So, and I also don't want to have the people get like I've had these like people that have never told a story in public before, and they're just like amazed at what an invigorating and like inspiring experience it is to tell their story in front of people. And they're like hooked now. Now they want to do it over and over again, you know? So,
Now they got to go to more parties, just get drunk and just spout random bullshit, you know, with an audience of whoever will listen. Been there, done that. That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
So you're having a blast with those things, it sounds like. Are you going to do any filming any of these things?
There was a friend of a friend who wanted to film it for his cable access show, but the owner of Tad's didn't really want a camera in there. But I do record them and post them on my blog. I'm trying to figure out a good like audio hosting, because right now I just have them on Dropbox and can't listen to it unless you have a Dropbox.
You want to make them like a podcast? Then, you mean?
I don't know. I'm not very technological. I mean, I just want people to be able to listen to them off my blog, you know, so I don't know.
What you can do? The easiest way to do it is Podomatic. It's a website. You can just upload the audio and then link to on your, or you can even try to do it as a SoundCloud, or one of those two things.
Okay.
Try that.
I'll write
Simple.
That down.
Done.
Thanks, bud.
You're welcome. let's tell everybody your zine again is, Somnambulist zine. And what's your website?
My website is a Blogspot website. It's somnambulistzine.blogspot.com. And somnambulist means sleepwalker, and it's SOMNAMBULIST. So somnambulist zine is spelled ZINE. So somnambulistzine.blogspot.com. And
there's no other word in the English language anywhere near that, so just type it in there loosely, and Google will fix it for you.
Yeah, there you go. Or Martha Grover Zine will work too. I mean, I came up with that name like when I was 22, and 10 years later, people don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I put a book out and I made it like 87 words long, which is like, you know, I think the next one will be half a word. It'll just be like four letters and it won't even be a word. It's too much, right? Gets to be too much.
Yeah. But, oh, well, I can't change it now. I mean, I could change it, but like, what's the point, you know?
No, I don't change it.
Throw.
I like it.
Yeah.
But now I even know what it means. That's awesome. Sleepwalker. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that in every single poem I write now. So, so listen, I put a bunch of links up on the Facebook's page for the Unknown Show. There's some links to Martha's stuff, her book, her website, her zine, her this and that, or their Etsy store. You have an excellent Etsy store, and people can they can subscribe to your blog, and they can get the damn thing in a snail mail. How many of you fucking people are getting snail mail? Raise your hand.
And
now look around.
Yeah, and there's also I wanted to distinguish between the blog and the zine. Like, if you read my blog and you're like, why would I subscribe to the zine and pay money if she has a blog? Well, it's not the same thing. So it's like what you get in the zine is different than what's on the blog. So it's new material.
Well, there you go. There you go, America.
Well,
so
thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on. It was a real blast. Tell your dad I said hi. Tell Franny and Mike Grover I said hello. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much.
All right, Martha. Catch you later.
Bye-bye.
Coming on next, I'm going to pull on Joe Saldivar. Joe Saldivar is a good friend of mine, and he is an author of two short stories and many other short stories, but two short stories that appeared in Uno Kudo Volume 2. The stories are Carol and Stripped Down. He also had a story in the first Uno Kudo. And he's going to come on today, and he's going to, you know, tell us about what it's like living in Denver, Colorado, and hopefully I can pry another short story out of him. He told me he wants to read one. So let's see if I can figure out which one of these people on this thing he is. I got a switchboard here, and sometimes I don't know who the fuck is who. I don't even know who I am. But I think this is him. Hey, Joe, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, man, how you doing, all right?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. What's going on in Denver?
You know, it's kind of fun. I love the whole internet thing. It's kind of a cliche because it's been around for a bazillion years by now. But the fact that I can sit in my apartment in Denver and participate in a radio show, and you know, we just had a call from Portland, and there's going to be folks calling in from all over the country. It's just weird to think that like 10 years ago we wouldn't have been able to do this at all.
I know. Isn't that
fucked up?
Yeah, like think about like the internet in 1993. It was just like, what could you even do? You could play Pong, I guess. Could you play Pac-Man online?
That was like the first, and this is like me dating myself seriously.
Yeah.
But that was like the first time I ever used. It wasn't really even the internet at that point. We had this our computer lab. This mainframe had these really old computers that were just like the screens were, the color was black and yellow. They didn't have any colors or anything. It was just text.
Uh-huh.
It was like straight out of War Games. And you could check the weather. There was this site, it's still around. It's called the Weather Underground. It's better now. It has color and things. But like you could type in the name of a city and then it would spit out the temperature and the time of day, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I could know what the temperature was in Timbuktu.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And now you can do too much shit on the internet. I don't get anything accomplished anymore. I used to be a very productive young boy. I don't accomplish a single thing anymore. I sit on Twitter and watch people joke about their cats getting laid, stuff like that.
It's a cautionary tale.
Yes. Our mutual friend Chuck Howe has a great story about the first time he used the internet. he was telling me that the first time he used the internet was basically to find a couch to sleep on, because he was touring with Phish, and he went to public library in like 1992 or 1993, and just went on message boards until he found a couch to sleep on. So I thought that was pretty funny. You know, it can be used for good if I get, you know, if you're so inclined. Check it out. So Joe, listen, it's going to snow here in Jersey. We're going to get like 2 inches of snow. Like, are you under like 8 feet of snow right now in Denver or no?
Well, it's cool being out here because whatever happens here, like, it's a day, maybe a day and a half later, inevitably ends up in New York. So it's almost like predicting the future. If it snows here, I could almost could write to you and be like, bud, stock up on bread and milk, man, because it's going to snow.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any bread. I don't have any milk. You look at my fridge, it's just like a big, vast, white nothing in there.
Oh, you're doing that. Those are the first things to go. And anywhere in this country, anywhere, probably in the world, you know, any place that they have supermarkets where they have bread and milk, if there's a snowstorm, that's always the first thing to go. I don't know why, but you go when those shelves are empty.
Yeah. So, man, I was lucky enough to get to hop on a plane with you recently. We flew out to L.A., and there was a party for Uno Kudo Volume 2, the release party, at an art gallery out there in L.A., and I got to see you read a story. It was probably the highlight of the night, watching you read your story stripped down. That was pretty great. What'd you think of that event, man? Tell everybody what the event was like. They're probably not going to...
It was good. Bud and I were we had some grandiose plans. We were going to get drunk outside and drink 40s on the steps. That was next. We had some great space in the back. This was in an art gallery. It's a fantastic art gallery in not downtown LA, but on the east side of downtown LA. Great space, big open space. We were going to have a good old knockdown slugfest, but.
I was gonna kick the shit out of you. I kept telling everybody the gallery owner was worried because the paintings were worth so much money. I said I was gonna throw you through one.
They should have. We even had the chairs. We had folding chairs. It would have been great. We had ropes.
There was an orchestra in there. I wanted to take some of the stringed instruments and smash them over your head just as a way to release some stress.
We got distracted with all this reading that was going on. All these people had this great stuff, and they took up a whole night. By then, it was over, and it was too late.
That's the thing, man. Nobody wants to see a reading. They want to see people beat the fuck out of each other. You know, reading is good in theory. You know, you're gonna go and watch somebody read some poetry or short stories, and then halfway through, when you see people fidgeting in their seats at a reading. It's because they're hoping that someone will take their pants off or somebody will put someone in a chokehold until they pass out or worse. You know, that's what's happening when people start fidgeting.
That's true. That's why we have Uno Kudo 3 will come out, and then we can all do all the things we never get a chance to do with 2. We can just pass them along to 3.
Oh, yeah. So, listen... I pulled you on the show because I wanted you to read a story. Are you gonna read a story, or are you gonna make me look like an asshole?
Well, let's see. It's about 50-50. But since I've got this thing called up and everything, and it'd be kind of stupid if I had this on my screen and didn't read it. I'd feel like an asshole, and that's wrong.
Cool.
So get some background on this. My friend Aaron, who's fantastic, is putting together an anthology about superheroes and real-life superheroes and fictional superheroes and people who admire superheroes. It's a great project coming out pretty soon. And I kind of threw up this piece about what it would be like to be a superhero and some of the things that you can get hung up on when you are in the thick of it. And so I called it Neighborhood X. And I'll jump into it here. So, Neighborhood X. It wasn't called X because it was exciting or cool or mysterious, like the X-Men, or the X Games, or even X-Rays. No, it was called X because in all of Metro City's 217 years, no one had ever bothered to come up with a better name for it. Other neighborhoods came and thrived and got names, but this irregular six-block orphan contained nothing and was used for nothing aside from growing weeds and dumping shopping carts. And even then, well, there was just one dumped shopping cart. The shopping cart excited Commander Amazing when he first arrived in Neighborhood X because it made the place look like an easy spot to make a quick capture. Illegal dumping, being only a misdemeanor, but still a crime that could be stopped and thus countable. The Commander Amazing had, at that very moment, stopped 736 crimes in 216 of the city's 217 neighborhoods. There was one neighborhood for every year of the city's existence, but Commander Amazing was far quicker than that, having accomplished his feat in only 5 years and 37 days. No one had ever come close to that total. Sure, there were guys who stopped a crime in every borough, on every island. Heck, Drama Girl once stopped a crime on every single day of the year, leap day included. But no one had ever stopped a crime in every neighborhood, and no one had ever stopped so many crimes in so short of a time. It made Commander Amazing famous. Commissioner loved him. The press loved him. Heck, even Giant Man noticed. At the police ball celebrating Commander's Amazing 700th collar in his 208th neighborhood, Giant Man himself walked up and said, "Great job, kid. Come see me when you get all 217. Giant Man, the legend, the head of the Collaborative of Good, or COG for short, wanted to talk to Commander Amazing. Even then, 6 weeks later, he could hardly believe those words had been spoken. This was his ticket to the big time, and all he had to do was nab one more small-time crook. A garbage dumper wasn't glamorous in the slightest, but no one would care, least of all Commander Amazing. Then the weeks passed. It wasn't long before Commander Amazing realized that the dump shopping cart was rusty and covered in weeds, a relic of a department store that closed 20 years ago. Since then, the only visitors to Neighborhood X had been a few stray dogs, a lost cyclist, and just once, Disco Dazzler, wanted to know if Commander Amazing wanted to go fly fishing on Saturday. He did not. After a couple of weeks of watching Neighborhood X with no results, he began to grow bored. Sure, there was crime elsewhere in the city, but finding a bet living in the neighborhood, possibly missing a chance to find and stop something from going down. Sure, the place was messy and overgrown, but cleaning it up would make it even less attractive to criminals than it already was. So he did nothing but watch and brood all day and all night, forever thankful that his amazing superpowers included the ability to stay awake for months at a time. On the fourth week, he resorted to luring supervillains into the neighborhood on the pretense of fighting them to the death, but no one seemed interested and no one showed up for a fight. Even Professor Psycho, who had brought Commander Amazing to a standstill 19 times in a row and who had vowed revenge after every single battle, failed to show up for round 20. The only visitor that week had been the commissioner, who was furious at Commander Amazing's sudden disappearance from the police blotter. But Commander Amazing simply shrugged. What could he do? He was on a mission. And finally, out of the blue, arrived Dr. Skull, who landed a skull-shaped rocket plane on the corner of Zebulon Avenue and simply stood there, pointing at Commander Amazing and saying nothing. "Ah, Dr. Skull," said Commander Amazing, feeling more alive than he'd been in a month. "I see you have taken up my challenge. Let us fight to the end and finish this once and for all." The doctor just stood there on the corner, not moving a bit. "Professor Psycho said you'd be here, but I didn't believe it," he finally said, remaining perfectly still. "Having a fun camping trip out here? Times have been good for me with you out of the game." "The time for fun is over, Skull," Commander Amazing boasted, his arms raised triumphantly. "Step into my arena and fight." But the doctor stayed where he was and just laughed. "Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? But you see, right here where I'm standing is part of Green Park West, not Neighborhood X. You bust me here, that'd be what? Your seventh arrest in this neighborhood? Boring. Green Machine makes that many around here in a month." Commander Amazing tried his best to snarl. "So you admit that you would lose if you fought me here?" But his baiting failed to have the desired effect. And Dr. Skull climbed into a skull-shaped rocket plane and prepared to take off. "Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. But we'll never find out, now will we?" And then he was gone, and Commander Amazing was alone with his battered shopping cart. The next week brought more supervillains and superheroes and the press and the public. And they all stood there on the corner of Zebulon and 115th, never stepping foot over the curb into Neighborhood X. They taunted, they pointed, They fought a raging three-day battle, which lasted until the last of Professor Psycho's psychobots fell just inches from the edge of the neighborhood. All Commander Amazing could do was watch as the police rounded up two truckloads of bad guys, all the credit for the arrest going to other superheroes. Not one caller for him, not one for Neighborhood X. Another week passed. Commander Amazing had been patrolling Neighborhood X for 45 days, 6 hours, and 27 minutes. At that moment, he sat perched atop the remains of his shopping cart, which he had fashioned into a rough and uncomfortable bench of sorts. Across from him, on the corner of Zebulon and 115th, stood the Terror Brothers, Carl and Jed. "They say you won't last past Christmas, big guy," said Jed, triumphant and arrogant in the way that nearly every supervillain and non-supervillain had been since the day Dr. Skull arrived. "They say you're going to run home to Mama, Commander Amazing." "Commander Amazing," added Carl, and they both broke out into raucous laughter. Their target did nothing but sit and stew. He'd been doing a lot of sitting and even more stewing over the past few weeks. He waited for them to make a mistake and cross over into Neighborhood X, but like everyone else, they carefully avoided moving any closer. "Oh, you should have heard what Giant Man said about you today," said Jed as he aimed a brick so that it landed with a thud at the edge of the curb and not an inch further. "He said you were pathetic, sitting here and doing nothing while there's a mob war raging." Carl joined in on the brick-launching fun and added, "And sitting here while Hypnotica mesmerized half the city, and when Midas 2 turned the mayor into a gold statue, and when a team of mean made off with Metro City's entire art collection." "Pathetic," said Jed. "Pathetic," said Carl. "Pathetic," they both said together, again and again and again, until Commander Amazing could take no more. Without saying a word, he cut them to pieces with his laser eye. He scooped up their corpses, briefly regretting that he transformed the shopping cart into something a lot less cart-like, and carried them in his arms to the Metro City Police Headquarters. Here he was welcomed with great fanfare, for the police saw Commander Amazing and the bodies of the Terror Brothers and assumed nothing but the best. Commissioner O'Malley was all smiles and handshakes. "You did it, my boy. Tell me, what was the crime that finally fouled our Neighborhood X?" Commander Amazing stared at the ground. "Murder," he said. And with that, he dropped the bodies and headed straight for the jail cells, being the first and only criminal ever caught within the 6-block confines of Neighborhood X.
That was great. I like all the different characters in there. They're just like, pretty much like, there's like so many of them, so many great ones. Professor Psycho, Commander Amazing, Dr. Skull, Green Machine, Dr. Skull with his skull-shaped rocket plane, and you got the Psycho Bots, the Terror Brothers, Giant Man, Midas, who, did I catch that right? Midas turns the mayor to a gold statue?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. That's a really cool story, man. It's like, just like, you know, playing around with all the different superheroes and the supervillain, that's got to be the most fun part, fucking around with all those different supervillains, you know?
It's fun coming up with them, just kind of thinking of, like, if I were an oddball superhero, what kind of name? Supervillains, I think, are a lot more fun because when you're a superhero, you kind of have to, like, your name has to be heroic because you're a hero.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're a bad guy, you can be anything.
Yeah.
You know,
so I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. I want to cut you off. I'm going to take a couple calls, and I hope you come back on again soon. We'll have to shoot the shit again real soon, all right?
That'd be awesome. Thanks, man.
All right. Be good, Joe.
Bye.
All right, I'm pulling a caller on. You've been holding for quite a while, 541. Who am I talking to?
Hello. Hey, bud, it's Ryan. I finally called.
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Hey. nothing much. Just chilling here in Oregon. What's up with you?
Fuck, another Oregon caller. We just had Mark.
I know,
Google
right?
Call
I mean,
Portland.
Who was that lady who called earlier from Portland? She sounded really sweet.
Yeah, that's Martha Grover. And
Yeah, I wrote down her website because I want to check that out. It sounds interesting.
She's awesome. Yeah, read her book, One More for the People.
Okay, I will do that. And you're doing a great job, bud. You're doing
a great job.
I love this
fun
show.
Over here.
I mean, I've been listening for like half an hour, but, you know, it's been pretty good. I've had fun.
Well, I don't listen. I don't listen when I get these callers on. I zone out. I'm like reading books and shit. And
yeah, I mean, you don't have to sit here and you know just give this huge monologue. I mean, you can just you know talk to people.
Uh-huh.
It's like you're just talking on the phone with a bunch of different people.
Oh yeah,
must be good.
So Ryan, tell everybody who you are. You have your own website, your own literary website called The Weekenders, right?
Yes, that's right. I have a. It's like an e-zine. I don't know. I'm hoping to expand on it soon. But right now, it's just an e-zine. It's a blog spot, kind of like Miss Grover's. It is theweekendersmagazine.blogspot.com. So it's just theweekendersmagazine.blogspot.com. We have an issue account set up and everything like that. I think we're on issue 7 right now, and it comes out 15th of every month. And pretty much just publish poetry, fiction. The guidelines are on the website, so if you want to submit, go ahead and do that. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm a writer myself. You know, I do fiction, poetry, all that. You know that, bud.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
That's pretty much it.
I'm going to share that. I'll share that link with the Facebook Facebook page for the show. Where there's going to be a lot of links popping up. Links to Joe Soldebar's writing, links to Ryan's site here, and to Martha Grover's stuff. So what else is going on in Portland tonight? Anything good?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I've been chilling around and trying to put some extra padding under my bed because the springs are popping out. Do you have that with your bed? Does your bed screw up?
No, Ryan. I'm an adult, Ryan. I saved my birthday money for 5 years and I bought myself a reputable bed. Recommend that you do the same thing. Actually, all your gold bond savings certificates that grandma gave you and go for yourself.
Condescending tone. I'm sick and tired of it. I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, that's cool, man. You should. You should fly out to New York City
kick your ass. Okay, I'll bash your head through one of those paintings. We'll go to Los Angeles as a.
Yes.
Okay. Are you gonna have another expo? Are you gonna have another expo for Unicudo?
Well, the next thing that's coming up is I got a novel coming out in. I think it's gonna be May. It's gonna come out in May from. Piscataway House Publishing, and we're going to have a party here down in the village, East Village.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the next party. And we talked to the Unicudo people. Maybe we'll have another. We'll have a reading down in Lower Manhattan.
All right, a lot of stuff going on. Cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to try to. I mean, I have a couple stories I've been sitting on, but I might submit something for Unicudo 3, which I'm looking forward to.
Send something in, okay?
That's for all the listeners.
Thanks
send something in. It's a great publication.
Yeah.
Great publication. Okay. All right, man. Well, I don't want to waste all your caller time, so. All right.
Yeah.
All right,
catch
man.
Catch you later, buddy. Be
Talk
good.
To you later. Bye.
Okay, 303, you're on the air. Who am I talking to? 303, are you there? Come in 303-842-5619. The internet's being a little screwed up right now. I see. Man, I shouldn't have kicked Brian off so quick. I got rid of him so quick, didn't I? For no reason. The switchboard. Anyway, let me see. I'm pull Ryan back on. Can't get this caller to work. Hey, Ryan, you still there?
Yeah, I heard you say you wanted to unmute me, so I called back. Hey, what's up?
Yeah, not so much.
The internet's not working.
This other caller, it didn't work out. They're not there.
So. Are they still, they're not in the queue anymore?
Yeah, they're not, they didn't want to talk to me.
Oh, well, from 303, where's that at? Isn't that like Seattle?
I don't know.
I think it's Seattle. Seattle? I have some friends with you. This sounds right.
Hey, hold on. Are you there?
I'm Ryan.
Are you there, caller?
Yeah.
Hello? Who is this?
This is Ryan.
Not you, Ryan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Who else is there?
Is there another? Am I on?
No, it's just me.
Ryan, stop talking. Who else is there?
Okay.
Can you hear anyone else?
Yeah.
Oh, it's me. It's Joe.
Oh, so it's Soldabar?
Yeah, I'm still connected.
Oh, what the fuck? This is the most unprofessional show in the fucking history of radio.
Okay, I'll go. I'll just be quiet. You talk to Joe. Okay. All right, go ahead.
No, I'm done with all you guys. I'm done with both of you guys. Thanks for calling in. It was a lot of fun having
you guys
you, on
the
show.
Screw you,
bud. Screw you. Thanks for calling, guys. We'll have to do this again sometime.
All right.
Yeah,
so that's gonna do it pretty much for the unknown show. Stick around because there's gonna be another broadcast coming on from Rips and Raps. They're gonna take another hour after this show, and they're gonna rip and rap, and they're gonna do all that stuff. They're gonna broadcast from Albuquerque and inform you about some comedy, some rap, some great entertaining stuff. They'll be more professional than me. So basically, you know what you ought to do? You ought to send me some hate mail or critiques about how I can improve this show, get my act together. Send me something, put it up on the Unknown Show page there on Facebook. And also, while I'm talking random bullshit, well, maybe not bullshit, send a submission to UnoKudo3, poems, stories, creative nonfiction. The website is unokudo@gmail.com. You have until the end of April to send something in. And also, send something into Aaron Dietz's superhero anthology. Find Aaron Dietz on Facebook. Subscribe to his crap or friend request him. Do something. I want to thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Rips and Raps. Thank you very much. Hang in there.